beautiful Bible of Bava Basra builds on the previous dinim and takes us into new areas and builds on other previous concepts. So we have a lot that's contained within this Mishnah. This Mishnah tells us that continuing the topic of a wall between two properties in a chatzer, which was the theme of the opening Mishnah, where it's expected that there will be such a wall. The Mishnah tells us here that kosul chatzer shenafel mechayvinos livnos at arba amos, that if you have the wall, but then it falls, so then one side can compel the other to rebuild up to dalet amos. Dalet amos is the basic minimum for hezek re'iyah, as Rashi fills in over here. So therefore, at least that much, one side can compel the other. And the Mishnah here is going to give us a couple of dinim. So on the one hand, this din, that up to dalet amos you can compel, is contrasted with a different scenario, which, to skip ahead for a second, the Mishnah tells us a different story, that midalet amos ulamayla ein mechayv noso, that from four amos and up, you don't have the right to compel the other. But if the first guy decides to do it on his own, if Reuven decides to build more than dalet amos on his own, so then samach lo kosel acher, if the other guy, if Shimon, decides to build another wall that's going to rely on this wall, afal pishlo nosan levesat tikra, even though presumably his plan is because he wants to put a roof on top of both walls, but he has not yet done that, but he has displayed that he plans on doing that because he is making this other wall for that purpose, then megalgalin olivus akol, then he has his obligation to participate in the wall that was built already for this purpose, and to pay half of that cost. Now, exactly what hakol means here is a very involved discussion. If you got to see, for example, the Ramban, and the Ramban quotes Yerushalmi, what exactly we mean by hakol here is something we'll push off for the moment, but there is this obligation to participate in the costs of the wall that he is benefiting from. Okay, so far so good. So here we see that the Mishnah is already telling us a couple of interesting dinim, building off both the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah. So the first Mishnah, which told us about the basic obligation of a wall between the two properties for the purposes of hezek re'iyah. So that's the premise of what's going on over here. But we also had a whole extra concept that was introduced in the previous Mishnah, that Shimon, our hypothetical beneficiary, can become responsible to participate in the construction costs of what Reuven does, and that could be tied into what happens later and his degree of benefit, etc., etc. And we got into the whole discussion of various concepts of Nana, of Yored, of Mishtarshi, of things like that. So this Mishnah takes that concept further and is going to add to our knowledge of that very crucial and practical concept of what exactly the principles and parameters are. So here, the previous Mishnah had spoken about that, where somebody was encircled on three sides and became responsible for some degree of participation once it was completed, whether it was completed by him or completed by the first guy. It's all part of the discussion. So here we're talking about a variation on that case, that there's a wall built between them, and Shimon becomes obligated because of something he does, that being that he sets up the stage, he sets the foundation for utilizing that wall as the basis for a roof. Okay, so far so good. Now there's a whole other element of the Mishnah, which is really a separate concept, a separate sugya, and a separate diyun. I hope we'll have time to explore this. Yeah, just to say a few words about it, just in case we don't, but it's really a whole other element, and it's part of the beauty of Shas and Mishnayos and the Gemara and Bava Basra, just the endless sea, but there's so many different branches one could break off and explore. And as I mentioned, we're trying to emphasize the themes that all combine together to larger themes, those are the ones we give priority to. But there's a whole other deal here that's in this Mishnah. So in addition to establishing when Shimon is obligated to participate and when he isn't, it's a difference between basically three scenarios, right? The basic scenario of the Dalet Amos of the first fence, the extra on top of the Dalet Amos when we don't necessarily know that Shimon is interested, and the third scenario when Shimon has expressed that he is interested, right? Those are basically three different scenarios the Mishnah is addressing. But embedded within that, so the Mishnah also tells us, given that these obligations exist, so what happens if there's a dispute about payments? All right, so what happens if Reuven says, you owe me, and Shimon says, I don't? So let's say in the first case, if Reuven says, you have to pay me, and in that case, that's where there was an obligation, regardless of what Shimon cares about or doesn't care about. And so there is going to be a chiyuv no matter what. So the only issue is, it's basically a factual dispute, that Shimon says, I paid. And Reuven says, you didn't pay. So who was believed? So according to the Mishnah, who is believed in that case?
Shimon
is believed, right? Shimon has the edge. Now, why does Shimon have the edge? So Rashi fills in a little bit what's going on here. That there is a well-known publicity to this obligation. Everyone learned the first mission of Baba Basra. Everyone knows that they have to have this wall. So therefore, you can't claim later on that there was any ambiguity here about what was supposed to be whose responsibility. So that being the case, Reuven would have demanded that Shimon pay up before proceeding. Why would Reuven build if Shimon's not paying yet? So therefore, we have every reason to assume that payment had already been there. Now, we noted when we had the skills cover before, that there is an interesting girsa issue here, which may affect how to understand this, that the way Rashi says it is that he wouldn't have proceeded without Hayatsoik all of Bebezdin. He would have gone to Bezdin and he would have complained about this. In my Gemara, everyone has different editions, but in my Gemara, there's an edition here where it says, Hagos Tikut B'tziyunim, that in other prints, the language is that he would have gone in front of Eden. So the difference is that Bezdin, he would have expected to deal with it, so it means that it would have been addressed, that he would have paid. While Eidim, perhaps, is just a way of establishing for the record that he's not mochel, that there's this debt there and this guy hasn't paid, and don't think that this was settled the way it normally would have been settled, because I'm establishing in front of witnesses for the record that it's not. So if you didn't do that, and if you, it's just your word, Reuven says, listen, I went ahead because he didn't pay me, so we don't trust that. We assume that what's more likely is that he would not have gone ahead like that without protecting himself in some way. And therefore, the presumption goes to Shimon. Now, this is all very, very interesting on a lot of levels, because the general premise is, the very strong premise is, Hamotzi mechaver olav harai. That if I come to claim money from you, I have to prove that you owe me. So that is the default starting position in all monetary issues, that there is a strong benefit that is given to the muchzak, to the one who's holding on to the money. So in this case, Shimon would be the muchzak. Reuven is coming to make a claim on him. So already, that could have been the end of the story. So there is no proof one way or another. So we should say that Shimon should have the upper hand. He's being demanded money of him, and there's no proof necessarily that he didn't pay. So that really should be the end of the story. So the whole idea that there's a back and forth here is interesting, meaning that we see that there are certain things that could override this. even though it's a high threshold. So the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra and elsewhere that Ein Holcha Mamon Acher Harov, that a simple majority is not enough to override the Chezkas Mamon. That if I come and I say you owe me money, and it's more likely that I'm right, that statistical proof would indicate that I'm right, because in most situations like this, facts would support me, that's not enough to override the Chazaka. Sounds like here, there's a little bit of a tennis match, a little bit of a back and forth, that it could have been enough, but ultimately we strengthen the Chazaka of the guy holding on to the money, because the fact that he would have paid, or that there would not have been a progress here of the Reuven going on to continue to build a wall, without that, all of that strengthens his position and allows him to hold on to his money. Hi.
I believe by Cheskos HaPlatim, like the three years is like a big deal in terms of getting that Chazakos that you can claim. Is it possible that one of the reasons why Hamas Yechur Al-Varai doesn't apply here so neatly is that there is no, like the person's challenging the very nature of the Chazakah, and there's no like time in which that, like the Chazakah would be chal like right away, but that he's like challenging that moment in time ever existed?
Well, there is some similarity between Cheskos HaBatim and this. It has to do with the subtext there also, that in the context of the Cheskos Gimel Shanim, so there's also a whole backstory. That the idea, we mentioned a little bit in one of the previous sagas, that the idea that if I've lived in a property for 3 years, so that gives me an edge, that gives me the Cheskos HaBatim. So it's not, as we emphasize that, it's not because that's what acquires the house. I have to have an independent claim as to why I own the house. I claim I bought it from you, for example. And my living there is just what supports that claim. But it also is part of a whole back and forth, because normally I should have a shtar. So the question is, how long am I expected to keep a shtar? So there's a whole psychology analysis going on here, that there's a constant back and forth here, that I will only keep a shtar, I can only be expected to keep a shtar as long as I can reasonably expect that somebody is going to make some kind of a fuss about my living here. And when it's clearly established that I've been living here without objection, so then I can become careless about the shtar. So if I make it here for 3 years and nobody complains, so then the fact that I don't have a shtar doesn't undermine my claim. So basically, if I were to live in a house for one day and say it's mine, I bought it, then somebody could reasonably wish upon my shtar. I could say, look, you know, where is it? So I'll have to produce it. But if I made it here for 3 years, so then the fact that I say that I don't know where the shtar is, so then that doesn't undermine my credibility. So this constant push and pull of, well, you know, there's this, there's that, I should have had a shtar, it's reasonable that I lost it, etc., etc. So here you have a similar dynamic, you know, that everyone knows that Shimon should be obligated to pay for half the wall, so then Reuven shouldn't have got ahead without it, and if Reuven is going to go ahead without it, so then at least he'll establish his claim in front of Edom. This constant push and pull back and forth of different psychological expectations and dumdanas, you have a similar kind of dynamic here. But it seems to all be overlaid on top of what we otherwise would have just said, okay, two people fighting, one guy has the money, so Hamotzi Mechaber Levaraya. Apparently, it's not the whole story. So, when we get to the third scenario, right, in the second scenario, there's no chiyuv at all on Shimon. So, if Reuven decides to build on top, beyond the Dalet Amos, so then there's no chiyuv on Shimon, so there's nothing to talk about. So, there's not going to be any fight. When Shimon shows that he is interested, so then that triggers an obligation, and that's what we'll spend more time discussing. But then you could have a question. Okay, so once there's an obligation, so then let's say there's a fight about that. So let's say the question comes up. Reuven says, okay, now we see that you owe me, and so I want it. And Shimon says, I paid already. So who's right about that? So then, who has the default assumption? Who has the chazaka in this case? Reuven has it, right? You don't assume that Shimon actually fulfilled this obligation to pay. So why is it different there? So there, we don't have such a obvious expectation, and we don't have the same kind of, Rashi had said that everyone knows about the initial obligation to split the fence. We also don't have a single point in time where we could point to where we would say that it would have been paid already. Right, so in the first scenario, Reuven shouldn't have gone forward without getting his payments, or at least establishing his claim. Here, we don't have any such scenario, because when Reuven built the extra wall beyond Dalet Amos, he didn't have a right to demand from Shimon. So he just went forward. And when Shimon triggered his obligation by building the extra wall, so maybe he is going to go ahead without paying. So at what point can you blame Reuven for not collecting? So Reuven collects as he's trying to collect. And so now Reuven says, I haven't been paid yet. So presumably he should have that credibility, have this obligation that has been triggered by Shimon's actions. And apparently that creates enough of a chiyuv that there's no presumption of payment. And therefore, it's going to override the normal chazaka, the normal benefit that comes to a muhsak. And if you got a chance, I didn't ask you to look at this, but if you look at the Gemara, and here the Gemara has a whole back and forth about this, it goes already up to Davav, it goes past the whole next Amud. The Gemara is going to talk about the possible parallel here of somebody paying money back before it's due. So how much credibility does a person have to say that if somebody borrowed money, right, so then that already shifts the chazaka because we know that he borrowed the money. And we know that he hasn't paid it back yet, because if it's before the Zman, so then we have a chazaka, a person's not going to pay back before the time comes for him to pay back. And the Gemara is going to have a whole back and forth about that. Is that really true? Can we say that it's so unlikely the person would pay back before the Zman? So the Gemara is bringing that up to compare here, that here this obligation was triggered. So that now becomes the most relevant piece of information, that he has an obligation to pay for his half of the wall. And we have no basis to say that it was already paid, similar to a loan that hasn't come due yet. We have no basis to say that the borrower, that the loave, would have paid back. And if you saw, as the Ramban quotes, and others point, that the Ramban has an argument with the Rambam about this, that here the advantage is to the Toveya, to Reuven. So how much of an advantage does he have? So that's the Machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban. I didn't put the Rambam, this Rambam, it's right halacha before what I told you to look at. The Rambam and Parak Gimel halacha beis of Halacha Shchenin. The Rambam says that the obligation is, the benefit goes to Reuven, but Reuven has to take a shvua, that this is one of the handful of things where we say Nishboyin v'notlin, that the person who comes to collect, he takes a shvua that he's telling the truth. Because you know, there's a little bit of a reisa there that he could be lying. He could be saying that take advantage of my upper hand here and collect on something twice. So he has to take a shvua that he wasn't paid yet, and then he's able to collect. And the Ramban disagrees with that, and the Ramban says, no, it's even worse than that for Shimon. That there's just basically no reason at all to think that Shimon paid, and it is, as the Gemara indicates, comparable to somebody in the middle of the term of a loan, and therefore it's just straight out advantage to Reuven. Not only does he get to collect, but he gets to collect without a shvuah. There's no need for him to even go that far to prove his superior position. Okay, so far so good. So that itself is fascinating and deserves its own analysis, and a lot to say about this whole notion of Pareya Tovzmano, which the Gemara has a lot to say about here, and the Halavai, we can look at everything, but we should just be aware that that is one of the many topics that our mission is bringing up. But that really is a secondary topic, because that is all taking for granted the different scenarios that the Gemara discusses. And really, the biggest chiddush for us is the third scenario. Right? The first scenario basically is the first Mishnah, the mutual obligation of a wall in a chatzer. The second scenario, that it only goes to Dalet Amos, and that anything beyond that is the choice, the free will of the initiator of Reuven, and doesn't have any responsibility on Shimon, is interesting, but okay, it's not the main chiddush of the Mishnah. One point, we mentioned this a little bit during the skills chaburah, it's interesting that Rashi seems to have a word here which you may not have guessed, that when he's talking about the difference between the third scenario and the second scenario, that in the third scenario, Shimon does something to make himself obligated. What does he do? So after Reuven had built more onto the wall, so how much did he build onto the wall? So l'achar shabano ha'echel ha'mayel medalat amos harbe. So he built on a lot more. So is that significant? Why harbe? Why doesn't it just say anything more? Right, it's a cutoff at Dalet Amos, and anything more than Dalet Amos is on Reuven. Until Shimon says that, I want, until Shimon displays that he's interested. So what's the point of harbe there? My first instinct was that maybe it is significant, that maybe it means that there's a different level here, that Dalet Amos, that's for Hezekiah purposes, right? So Dalet Amos translates to about 6 feet, between 6 and 8 feet. So Amos and Machlokas, whether it's a foot and a half or two, so we're talking about at least 6 feet. So Dalet Amos is to stop vision, is to stop Hezekiah. When you get to 6 feet, you're covering up most people's eyes. But you can't make a roof on top of that, because you will also be cramping in most people, or certainly be cramping in some people, and making it impossible for a good percentage of the population to come into your floor if you're going to make a roof on top of a wall that is only Dalet Amos high. So there's a big qualitative difference between a Dalet Amos wall and a wall that is roofable. So I think in America, a story is usually assumed to be about 10 feet. So if you work with numbers like that, so if you go just a little bit beyond 6 feet, so you're not yet roofable. So that's essentially what the Mishnah seems to be working with, that when you were just dealing with Hezekiah, the basic obligation that Shimon is connected to no matter what. So if it's Dalet Amos, okay, so then he has no possibility to build a roof on top of that. But if he wants to build a roof, so then he shows that he's happy that it's not just 6 feet, it's 10 feet. So it has to be a significant jump from one to the other. So let's say if Reuven would have done a wall that was 6'2", 6'3", so it would still be within the first category. That still wouldn't be roofable. So maybe the emphasis there is that a little bit over the basic minimum is still within the basic requirement, because that becomes, okay, that's how we did it. We did the Hezekiah with a 6'2" wall, because that's what made sense here, rather than a 6 foot wall. But maybe that's what Rashi is getting at, that it only actually changes when it's harbe, when it's significantly into the next category. But again, to go to the Hagos and Siyunim here, so the Pnei Shlomo is written by the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Shlomo Gantzried, so he suggests that that word is extra and maybe should be taken out. So it doesn't necessarily have that much significance, or maybe that's debatable. Okay, so with that, so this notion that building an extra wall, even before you actually use the first wall for any kind of roofing, that creates an obligation for Shimon to participate. What drives that? What's the basis of that obligation? And if you had a chance to see, it seems that this is a machlokas among the Rishonim.
I think one opinion in Tosos is that it's like Gila Das, like Gila Das.
So the truth is, Gilui Das is going to show up in most of the Rishonim. And Gilui Das seems to play a role here, actually, no matter what you think is going on. That Gilui Das is a crucial detail, which isn't itself the Mechayev. That it sounds like there's something else that is Mechayev that is working together with Gilui Das. Right, so, yes, that is the crucial detail, that Reuven becomes the beneficiary of Shimon's Gilui Das, that Shimon did something to show that he's happy about this, and that's called Gilui Das. But what was it that the Gilui Das was triggering? What is the real basis for the Chiyuv? Max?
Nene.
So Nene certainly is the candidate, right? And a number of the Rishonim do seem to be working off of Nene. So who would be on that list? Seems to invoke Nene.
Tosfos
for a start, right? So Tosfos on our daf. So Tosfos brings up Nene. So we look at Tosfos afal pishlo nos and tikrim agavim sakol. Right? So Tosfos says, "Afagav zed Nene v'zolachaser poter." Right? Even though that the rules of Nene normally are that there's a ptur if the mahane is not losing anything. So shouldn't that be true here? Right, Reuven built a wall that is benefiting him fully. So, and this is not like the previous Gemara, right, the previous Mishnah Gemara over there, we saw that that was connected to Nene, the Gemara in Bava Kamma connected that din to Nene, but the Gemara explained that that was chaser. Right, because maybe there was a need to build more of a wall to surround Shimon's property. So you don't have that here necessarily. Right, Reuven just built a wall that's there to fence off his own property. So maybe there's no chisarim. So if there's no chisarim, afogad zeh nevzal chaser should be pater. So yeah, here's our friend Gilui Das. That because he was Megalos Das, that he's happy about it, so then he should be Chayiv. And that's also what it sounds like in Bava Kamma, Chaf Mibes, the Ka'amar Taim of the Nikaf, Hamakif Potter. So specifically that if the Nikaf was the one who chose to build the fourth wall, so then there's a Gilui Das there also. So you see that, what do you see? Shema Amina Zen Nen Vizela Chaser Pata Filohachish Amanikov Chayiv. So once again, they're in a situation where there could have been a Ptur, but if there was an expression of appreciation by the beneficiary, so then he's Chayiv, so okay, nearly. That's what it seems like. So that is Tosfos' main answer. Now, Tosfos also has another statement here. See, Hachinami, if you want, I'll give another answer. So, Hacha Zechaser, or maybe like the Gemara had said about the last Mishnah, the Gemara Bava Kamma said about the last Mishnah, maybe here there is also a claim of Chisaron on Reuven's side, that Garim Alalag Via Kosl Maya Danamis Kadeshli Hezek Ria Beshumin Yimimimimim. That maybe because he's got this guy living right up next to him, that he needs even a higher fence than he otherwise would, because he doesn't feel protected with just Dalet Amos from this guy. So it's similar to what the Gemara and Bava Kamma said about the previous case, Ad Skarmpili Hakafi Yusera. So maybe there's a similar point here. Hi, Max.
I just wanted to clarify. When he says that there's Hezekriya now, is he talking about the case where, like, the other guy builds a wall next to his wall, so now there's more Hezekriya? Or is he just talking about the Stam case? Why there's a wall? I thought Tosfos was talking about the scenario where it's a guy builds a wall that's above 4 amot, then another guy builds another wall, and he's saying that he has to build it even higher now because of an additional hezekiah issue.
Well, he has to be because that's the only case in which he's chayiv.
Yeah. So what's the what exactly is the additional like hezekiah and I think that guy built
so,
the wall?
You'd have to imagine it's true, like it's not so obvious. We'd have to say that it's interesting because Tosfos really requires you to kind of fill that in. Right? So you have to say that if he's not going to use it for living space, so then yeah, no, Dalet Amos is always enough. But once I see, okay, you're building here and you're going to put up your own room. So now it's a little too close for comfort. So now I need more than Dalet Amos. So therefore, I want you to pay for it also. But you see, Tosfos doesn't love this answer. Right? Tosfos is the first, and that the first answer. There's a significant difference between the first answer and the second answer. And we'll come back to it in a second. Okay. So, yeah.
Just said the Chazal say that this is the minimum for Hezekiah, but this person might want to be more careful.
Yeah,
and
but
that's
why
he built it.
But then why is that Shimon's problem, though?
It's not, but he's still, at the end of the day, with the structure was...
He saw enough for it to be a Chisar?
Yeah.
But then why is that only true when Shimon builds another wall? Because the problem is, in the first scenario, let's say, or would be the second scenario, rather, so let's say if Reuven built a high wall, Reuven built a 7-foot wall, so Shimon, on the surface, doesn't have to pay for that extra foot if he doesn't do anything to show that he's happy with it. So somehow, this would...
It doesn't happen at all, though.
Sorry?
It doesn't happen at all, though.
Right, but if the emphasis is that it's a chisaron,
someone just calls it a chisaron on themselves.
But how did it become? So, because you need both, you're saying you need the nena and the chisaron, right? Just the chisaron without it is not a mechayev. So you need the nena and the chisaron. So, but the nena is not causing the chisaron, which is also somehow the hana is causing the hezekiah, which wouldn't have been there before. The chisaron is the hezekiah, and the hezekiah is being caused by his hana, somehow. Right? Had he not chosen to build this extra wall, there wouldn't have been this extra hezekiah.
This is the second dose.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is what's it's difficult. So it requires a lot more, which is presumably why Tosfos doesn't like it. But as we'll flesh out in a second, maybe the need for a second answer is that it's actually a big chiddush in what Tosfos is saying in the first answer.
Don't they just keep the same, like when he builds the fence around it,
mm-hmm.
the fence itself is bigger and the fence helps the person on the inside, so too, the fence is taller, it helps him build the arch,
right.
And he gets on up.
Right, so that's the same.
And he has to use more height, so it's an exactly parallel.
Exactly parallel to what?
To the case of the fence around, that he has to use more material for it.
Except that he had to use more material because the guy was there and he's benefiting. So I'm benefiting your property, and because I need to benefit your property and to benefit my property at the same time, so you have a hana from my fence, and the fence is more expensive. But here, it's the hezekiah is the issue. The hezekiah, you have to say, is connected to his hana, which I mean, that is clearly what Tosfos is getting at, to parallel them, but it's just it's a little bit more of a stretch. And that seems to be what Tosfos is saying, to parallel to what the Gemara in Bava Kamma says about the first case. Okay, so there is a big chiddush in what Tosfos is saying in the first answer. And we'll explore this more in a second, but let's consider some other views in Rishon to compare it to. So who else seems to be talking about Hana as the Mechayev? If you saw the Ramban, the Ramban, when he quotes the Holy Yerushalmi, but the Ramban raises the issue that it seems like Hana is the factor here, because this guy is planning to use the wall now to support his own roof. But what question does the Ramban ask? Yeah?
How do we know that, like, he's doing it? That he's going to end up using that wall.
Right.
He may just put the wall there to use it like in his own property.
Yeah, maybe he won't. Maybe he won't end up using the roof. So how could you be mechayiv him for this usage, which may not even actually happen? So then the Ramban quotes the Tosefta, and he says, but Lamaisa, he still is benefiting. That somehow this whole package means that he's happy about the wall there, and he's going to make a room there. So he needs a roof and a wall. So if there wasn't a wall there, so then he'll end up having a roof that doesn't need the wall, maybe. Maybe he can support the wall without the roof, make support the roof without the wall, but he won't have a wall. So Lamaisa, he's benefiting from the wall, which, because he's making a room, he's going to care about. So ultimately, the Ramban is also about Nana, and that Nana is established here through his Gilui Das. But who is it who focuses on something else? The Nimuki Yosef. Now, what does the Nimuki Yosef say? Now, what is the main reason for the Chiyuv? Now, according to the Nimuki Yosef, the main Machayiv here is the fact that Reuven is basically selling half of the wall to Shimon. So because he is building and including Shimon in the acquisition of the wall, so that's what makes Shimon have to pay for it. And he emphasizes here, what is the kinyan? The kinyan is the kinyan chatzer. That because the space is shared between the two of them, so half of this wall is essentially on Shimon's land. So through his land, he is acquiring it. Now, in order for there to be a kinyan, and so a kinyan chatzer is a thing, right? There is a notion that one can acquire something through that item being placed in their property, in their chatzer. But kinyanim in general are not automatic, that they happen on their own. A kinyan happens because of a meeting of the minds between a seller and a purchaser, between a makna and a kona. So the kinyan is in general the method by which property is transferred between the two parties. But in general, for the most part, you need the cooperation of both parties in order for a kinyan to happen. Right? I can't just make a kinyan on your stuff without your consent. That's called stealing. And you can't just be mocking me something without my consent. That also is a problem. And sometimes we say, Zachem alu adam shalalufana, but we have to establish that it's a tzchus. And here, if you're making me pay for it, so it's not a straight schus. So in general, for a kinyan that involves payments, so you need both parties to be cooperating. I need to be interested in selling it to you, and you need to be interested in buying it. So we have to establish here that if that's what's going on, that yes, the chatzer is the method, but we still need the cooperation of both parties. Was that a hand?
Yeah, I just thought with kinyan chatzer that if it's l'tova, mm-hmm. You don't need.
Except it's not just l'tova because you're also making him pay for it. So what if he says, "I don't want this"?
Wait, especially, I thought you would do like an overall, you calculate which would be ultimately with both factors, and if it would lead towards l'tova, then you would just say that.
But that's a part of what's complicated here, right? Because we're going past the Dalet Amos, so we have to figure out how do we establish that. Now, that's what is going to play a role here, because that's what I was saying to you before, that Gilui Das is a factor in everybody's understanding. So Gilui Das is going to be crucial for this too. So the way the Nimuki Yosef articulates it is that basically the Reuven guy built this with the understanding that he's basically a speculative contractor here. You know, the way people build things hoping somebody else will want to buy it, knowing that it'll be in their interest. So Reuven builds this wall knowing that it potentially could be of interest to Shimon. So he's waiting until Shimon expresses this interest, and he says, okay, when such time comes, so I had in mind that you should be a partner in it. So that's basically what the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef says, that Reuven built this knowing that that day could come, and when that day comes, so now he's ready to collect from Shimon and to transfer through the Chatzer the wall to Shimon. And so that explains how Reuven had his das. What about Shimon? Where is Shimon's das coming? So that's the Gilui das here, the fact that Shimon shows that he's happy to take it, so he's happy to benefit from it, so now you have both parts. Okay, so far so good. So here's a very fundamental question. Why does the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef not say like Tosfos in the Ramban? Why does he not simply use Nene as the explanation for what's going on here? And that requires not saying Nene here, by the way, requires seeing this case, this Mishnah, and the previous Mishnah as significantly different from each other. Right, is this just a twist on the previous Mishnah, or is this a whole different story? Because the previous Mishnah, we saw that Nene was really the way the Gemara understood it, not our Gemara here, but the Gemara in Bava Kamma had told us the previous Mishnah was about Nene. And that seemed to work for that, even though we had to also bring in other factors, and we discussed how those other factors could perhaps be combined, or maybe identified with each other. But here, to move away from Nene, is to see this case as significantly different. So, who was up first?
Can you just explain the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef again?
The Nebuchadnezzar Yosef does not seem to think Nene plays a role here at all.
Right.
Right? That this is a function of Kenyan. That basically, Reuven, speculative contracting here, speculative construction, like people do with flipping houses all the time, right? They don't wait till somebody to order them. They build the house first, and then they know somebody's going to be interested, and then they say, okay, now you came along, here I'm selling it to you. So that's basically what Reuven did, according to the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef, that he said, you know, I want a wall. I have a feeling Shimon's going to someday want this wall too, so I'm going to build it on behalf of both of us. But it's not exactly like what we saw before about Yored, where he has the reason to say, I'm doing this on behalf of Shimon, because the day may never come. Right? Shimon may never build this wall, may never build the other wall that he relies on, that he relies on the first wall. So if that never happens, so then Reuven's out his investment. Right? He never gets this half participation. So essentially it's speculative. Saying that I think it's good, the day is going to come that Shimon's going to want to go halfsies with me. So that was his intention. I'm ready to be machne to him when he decides the time has come and he has the interest and the funds for expansion. And therefore, I'm going to collect at that time. And Shimon's part to express his willingness is when he takes a step towards that. Even though he has not yet utilized the wall, he's just shown what his plans are by building this extra wall. So it doesn't seem like it's about Nene. So why not? What's wrong with Nene?
Dude, for you.
I was going to say, does Nebuchadnezzar Yosef comment on the other mission at all?
He does. Yeah, and the other kind, the other mission, he seems to understand differently, which we can come back to. But yeah.
So maybe for this Mishnah, mm-hmm. When the wall is first being built, it's being clearly built for by one person, and I guess for one person, or at least above the Adamos. It's not as opposed to the former Mishnah where we're trying to like prove that like why this was his at the beginning. We're trying to prove why Shimon would want to then acquire it, and that requires Nene might not be enough to be its own like Kenyan. where Nimuki Yosef wants an action. He doesn't want to just prove why he might want it, but what actually was like the Kenyan in which it, what made it happen, I guess.
What made the Kenyan, you're saying because they're going to be the ownership one way or another.
Yeah, because the ownership has to change.
It has to be the ownership, yeah. Right? Because since that is a fact, so we need to know what does that. So maybe he's only addressing that. Is that
not only addressing that, but that point is highlighted more of how the ownership is switching back and forth, as opposed to the other cases where, at least according to some, it seemed more like you were proving like the person like you wanted to be like it was a joint venture, even if he didn't like think about it like right away because it would benefit him, like it was his wall too. Or here it's like very clearly Reuven's wall that then becomes Shimon's wall because of, or it seems like that would be the case.
Interesting. Okay, is it your own?
I feel like it kind of is Nana in a sense also, like when Shimon takes the step forward in a sense, like yeah, he's showing that he wants the wall there, that he is going to benefit from it, and then at that point Reuven collects. So is that Gilui Das not?
Well, again, that's what Tosfos seems to be saying.
Was that not what the Nimuki Yosef saying? That, like,
well, he doesn't say those words. He doesn't invoke. He focuses purely on the Kenyan.
Right. So I'm saying, so what step does Shimon take that then? Isn't that step Shimon that Shimon takes the idea that he is being Nana?
Well, it sounds like if it weren't for the fact that he acquires ownership in the wall, his Hana would not be enough. The fact that he's benefiting. Had he been benefiting without ownership, it sounds like that would not be enough.
To make him chai, that he has to have.
Yeah. And Tosus seemingly would think it's enough. Max?
Would he even be allowed to benefit from it if he didn't own it? Like,
well, it depends what kind of benefit. You mean saying to put a...
Use it.
Right, so presumably not. Right, that kind of benefit, to actually put something on top of it. We saw the Rishonim talked about that when somebody places a wall purely on his, even if somebody volunteers to put the wall purely on his property, he would be able to physically put something on it.
Okay.
But it would depend what kind of benefit. You know? So if the benefit, like, so for example, right now, where he hasn't put a roof on, he's just benefiting now from the existence of the wall, right, like, the Ramban said, for example, that even without the roof, even if he never puts the roof on it, but just he benefits because the wall is there. And that's mechayev. So he's not doing anything. And yet he should be chayev for that.
Is it possible that Nimuki Yosef doesn't necessarily hold that particular type of benefit is a benefit? And as such that
so maybe, but let's even say more than that. If you think about it, there's a very big chiddush in what Tosfos at least is saying. Right, so to focus, and this is what I was alluding to before, to focus on the first answer in Tosfos, which seems to be the Iker. And there's a very significant difference between the first answer of Tosfos and the second answer of Tosfos. Right, it goes to the understanding of Zenene Bezelo Chaser Potter. If you think about it, Tosfos with itself and with the Nimuki Yosef, the two answers of Tosfos, and thus with the Nimuki Yosef, could be arguing about the nature of the exemption of Zenen and Vizelopata. So if you think about it that way, I think there's a Chiddush that's in the first answer in Tosfos that the second answer doesn't have to accept. And maybe, therefore, the Nimuki Yosef doesn't accept it either. What's that chiddush? Right? If we normally say, Zenene v'zelo pater, v'zelo chaser, is pater. Tosfos in the first answer is making a major qualification to that.
Unless the one getting the benefits, the one to like take that step.
Okay.
Tosfos says that it's normally pater. The reason why in this case it's chayiv is because Shimon starts to work.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a step to start roofing it.
Or to be Megala his das, right? The fact that he's Megala his das.
Right.
Why does Gilui Das matter? And what's the reason that zeh nehneh v'zeh lo chaser is pater. Maybe one could imagine, maybe this isn't the whole story, but maybe one could imagine that, listen, there's a limit to what I'm entitled to charge for. People benefit from all kinds of things, like we discussed in the previous sukkah. So if I build a nice house, I spend a lot of money building a nice house. So sometimes the neighbors complain and sometimes they don't complain, right? So the way they, sometimes they're happy to have a nice house on the street. So can I charge people for walking past my house because they're happy to walk past a nice house? Or they're happy, let's say they're happy to live on a block with a nice house, can I charge people for that? So presumably not, right? There's a limit to how much I can quantify a benefit to somebody else. So presumably the whole schus I have to charge someone is premised on there being at least some kind of a cost to me. And the cost, not that the endeavor cost me, but that your hana cost me. So if I'm building my house for myself, the fact that you happen to enjoy walking past the house or living next door to the house, but that did not add to my costs at all, I have no justification to demand payment for that. If that's the case, so then why does your Gilui Das matter? Not premised at all on your lack of initiative. All right, it's simply that I didn't lose anything from your benefit. So if I don't lose anything, why does it matter whether you show that you're happy about it? The idea that Gilui Das should matter for Hana is a chiddush. So Tosus' second answer avoids that chiddush. So no, we'll go back to the Gemara in Bava Kamma. There's a chisaron here. And it kind of had to stretch to avoid that chiddush because we had a hard time understanding how the chisaron connects to anything. Or why there's more Hezek Re'iyah now all of a sudden. So the fact that it was a difficult approach highlights maybe there's a discomfort with that initial chiddush. So the Nemuki Yosef could easily not be happy with that chiddush. Nemuki Yosef could say, no, the reason there's no chiyuv when lo chaser is because lo chaser. And it doesn't matter what the beneficiary is doing. And the Sefer Sukkos David points out that the Nemuki Yosef could be l'shitaso. Because the Nemuki Yosef has a comment in Bava Kamma, on Daf Chaf, on that sugya, where he quotes from the Yad Ramah about the following. So the main example of Zenin of Zelo Chaser in the Gemara in Bava Kamma is Hadar B'chatzah Chaveru Shalom Midaito. If somebody sleeps in somebody's house, and somehow it doesn't cause any kind of a problem by doing that, but the owner of the house wants to charge this person after the fact just for his benefit from having a good night's sleep. So there we see his pater, he's not allowed to charge him for his good night's sleep. But there's a difference if it was a hotel. If a hotel is set up for that purpose, Kaimala Agra, so a hotel has the right to charge. And they can charge after the fact also. But somebody who's not a hotel is not allowed to charge after the fact. So what if you have a scenario like this? Reuven, especially this, I guess you could imagine nowadays in the era of Airbnb, right? So it's the scenario is actually much more easily imaginable. Or maybe it was always, maybe in the time of the Gemara was also, because maybe they didn't have fancy hotels, so a hotel looked like a regular house too. So I guess either scenario. But let's say somebody thinks he's renting a house from Reuven. And he's ready to pay Reuven, because Reuven has a business arrangement. He rents out his house. And instead, he ends up sleeping in Shimon's house. And Shimon is not a hotel. There's not an Airbnb either. He doesn't charge for his house. He doesn't expect anybody to be staying in his house. So Shimon finds out afterwards that Levi stayed in his house. So normally, that's Hadar B'chatzu Chaveru Shalom B'daito. So Shimon should not be able to charge Levi, right? Except that Levi was ready to pay Reuven. So he was Megala Daito that he's happy to pay. So does that change anything? Right? Normally Shimon can't charge Levi. But in this case, Levi had been ready to pay a third party. Levi had been ready to pay someone else for the same benefit. Does that matter? What do you think? So there in Bava Kamma, the Nebuki Yosef quotes the Arama, it doesn't matter. Zed Nanev is Zelo Pater, Zelo Chaser is Pater. So if Zed Nanev Zelo Chaser is Pater, it's still Pater when the beneficiary has shown that he would have paid somebody else for that same Hana. So if that's the case, you see that it's just an objective tour in the scenario. And the Gilui Das of the beneficiary doesn't matter. So therefore, the Nebuki Yosef is going to say that Zadanev is a lochaser, is pater, is still pater. So why is there a Chiyuv here? It's because of the Kenyan. So what's the view of Tosas? Why does it matter when there's a Gilui Das? Because it is Taka Bechidish, right? Why should it matter? So I think that the nature of what Tosfos would be saying is that it kind of goes in both directions. That, like we said before, there are Hanas of all degrees. And some of them are enough of a significance that there should be a responsibility to pay for, and some of them aren't. And where do we draw the line between when you really are a free rider benefiting from my work and you should have to pay me, and where it's the kind of thing that's just like people walking past my fancy house and I can't be expected to collect from them? Or like the story I mentioned last week about the baker who wanted to charge the poor man smelling the aroma of his bread. Right, where do we draw the line? So by focusing on Zelo Chaser, maybe we're really talking about a relationship that goes both ways. That it means that it's not fair of the Mahane to charge because he didn't have any skin in the game, he didn't lose anything. So he didn't expend anything towards this. But also, it indicates something about the nature of the Hana, that kind of Hana that's just already covered, so to speak, it's already bought and paid for, it's already on somebody else's account, that even as far as the other beneficiary is concerned, it's just not called significant. That when I benefit from your nice house by walking past your nice house, yes, I'm getting enjoyment, but it's not enjoyment that counts. It's not enjoyment that I should be expected to pay for. It's already on your cheshbon. And it's part of the nature of the world that we all just share a world, and like we said before, there's costs and there's benefits. In some ways we hurt each other by living in the same place, and in some areas we mahani each other, and Rav Basra is a little bit about both. But if I actually take some initiative to show that this is something that I am actively enjoying, So then maybe that tilts the equation. Maybe that moves the needle a little bit. It's no longer just some passive thing that's on your cheshbon. And then we get into free rider territory. Right? Then we get into the issue that becomes something where I am benefiting in a way that it's not right that I shouldn't pay for it all. Now, the truth is there's two ways you could articulate that. You could say that it just becomes a more concrete benefit to me. Or you could say that it actually becomes a chisaron to the other guy. Because for him to have to shoulder all the costs of something that actually is a significant benefit to the other party that he really would have had to do on his own, that gets us into free rider territory. And everyone loses when they have to do the cost themselves that other people could have been expected to participate in. So then it becomes a chisar. So that actually becomes an easier way to say it, that the gilui das means that it's not just my benefit, Reuven's benefit, but it's our shared benefit. If it's our shared benefit, we should both have to pay. And if Reuven has to pay for the benefit of Reuven and Shimon, so then that's a chisaron to Reuven. Yeah?
But isn't the fact that Tosfos gives a chisaron answer that's slightly different, that he probably, at least in himself, means more the former for this answer?
But that the first answer is not?
No, meaning that he's more focused on it being more of a concrete benefit than there being an actual chisaron, just because he gives chisaron as the second answer.
Except maybe it means both. Maybe he means he's saying that they're... I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, he could be saying that either one is a chisaron, but I'd rather there be a more overt chisaron. Because still, the chisaron doesn't mean that I'm spending more, but it means the fact that I'm spending something that you should have to share in. Right? So the fact that I have to shoulder all the costs, even if the costs do benefit me 100%, but that we should be sharing in it, that's something that hurts me. And we've seen also in other contexts that chisaron doesn't just mean that I'm actually suffering, it means that I'm just being compromised in some way. So like we discussed how it could come up in intellectual property and like that. So for example, if I can't profit in the future because of what you're doing, that could also be called a chisaron. So too here. So we're going to have to stop for mincha now. But Bez Hashem, we'll continue this tomorrow, and we'll see how this could affect some practical questions. A few other makoros have this will impact on some of the practicalities that can play out.